2021-1561, Hoyt Augustus Fleming v. Citrus Design Corporation. Mr. Dowler, please proceed.
Good morning, Judge Lurie, Judge Hughes, and Judge Stahl. My name is Mike Dowler, and I represent Hoyt Fleming, the appellant in the case. Your Honors, my time is short today, so frankly, I prefer to just answer questions that you have, but barring that, I'm going to go through the issues. There are two primary issues, separate issues, that are on appeal. The first one is the Fleming's revised motion to amend certain claims in the patent, and the second issue is the validity of claims 137 through 139 in the same patent. Addressing first the revised motion to amend, the real issue here is regarding claim construction, and I know Your Honors are familiar with the process. There's the revised motion to amend, there's an opposition to the motion to amend, there's a reply, and there's a third reply. In none of that briefing did any of the parties, address an issue of claim construction. It seemed basically based on all the briefings that both parties were taking what would otherwise be called the plain and ordinary meaning of the claim language. If you read the claim language, it seems apparent from its face that it just means what it means, and there wasn't any difference among the parties in terms of what any of those terms meant, and so no issue of claim construction came up in any of the briefing or during the hearing of the matter. That said,
counsel, this is Judge Stoll. And the board did find this claim indefinite, right? This claim language that we're looking at. Found it indefinite. So that's kind of a claim construction. I mean, you use claim construction that when you're trying to construe a claim, and if you can't construe the claim, then you might say it's indefinite. Here, the reason for it being indefinite is the lack of a additional claim element identifying when you would choose the first procedure or the second procedure, as I understand it. But isn't typically when somebody makes a court makes a determination on indefiniteness, they're trying to construe the claim, right? But they say it's so indefinite, I can't figure out what this means.
You're right, Your Honor. The board did come up with claim construction, and you'll see that at APPX 39. And that's where I was headed with this. There was no issue of claim construction that arose between the parties. There was no issue of claim construction that arose during the hearing. And yet, when the final written decision was issued, the board did announce a claim construction. And again, that's at APPX 39. Now, that forms what we contend are four primary points of error with respect to the revised motion to amend. Number one, the board didn't perform any claim construction analysis. It simply announced what the claim construction was. So in this regard of the case precedent saying that a claim construction is necessary and the board's requirement to give reasons for why its claim construction is what it is are simply not present in the board's decision. Number two, the board's claim construction is inconsistent with the claim language itself, the specification, the prosecution history, and it's contrary to the only expert testimony that was offered with respect to these claims. And you won't find any analysis or argument in Cirrus's appellate brief disputing that. We went through in a lot of detail showing why the board's claim construction was wrong in light of the claim language, the specification, the prosecution history, and the expert testimony, and none of that is really challenged in Cirrus's briefing. The third point of error is, the board based its decision on indefiniteness, like you mentioned, and it also based its decision on written description based on its claim construction. So, our position is if you start out with an incorrect claim construction, it's only natural and probably expected that you're going to find issues with specification support and perhaps even indefiniteness. And in this case, you will see from the board's decision that in every instance where it decided against Mr. Fleming on these claims, in analyzing the specification support for the new claims and the indefiniteness of the new claims, it specifically referenced and quoted its, what we would contend, its incorrect claim construction. Finally, there's a, what we would contend is a violation of the APA on this issue. To announce a brand new construction.
Could you go into that written description argument and go into detail on why you think substantial evidence doesn't support the board's finding on written description?
Yes. So the board's finding is not supported on the written description because the claim construction that it was looking for in the written description is wrong. For example, there, we went through in our briefing and showed that there are two primary errors in the board's claim construction. Number one, the board required that the two procedures be selected when an airspeed is above a certain speed. And that simply is incorrect in terms of the claim language itself, the spec, the prosecution history, and the expert testimony. And so because that's wrong, it's really not surprising that the board didn't find that in the specification. Right. So, I mean, if you start out wrong, you're going to end up wrong when it comes to claim construction and specification support. And there's a case that is really directly on point in this regard. It's the Shearing case, where that's exactly what happened. The claims were misconstrued, and therefore there was an incorrect finding of lack of written description or Section 112 support. And you'll find those the board's quotations of its own claim construction in every finding that it made on the 112 issue and the indefiniteness issue. So I hope that answers your question, Your Honor.
Anything further, Mr. Dowler?
Yes. So on the eighth, we'd also contend that the board's new claim construction violated Mr. Fleming's rights under the APA, which requires that he be given notice of the issues that are going to be presented against him. And because this is an issue that was first announced in the final written decision, he wasn't given an opportunity to litigate that issue at all. And so we would contend that that's the fourth point of error with respect to the revised motion to amend. Moving to the validity of claims 137 through 139 in Mr. Fleming's patent, Juris's briefing contends that Mr. Fleming simply asking this court to reweigh the evidence, and that is just simply not true, Your Honors. What we're pointing out is that the evidence wasn't considered, and the board impermissibly cherry-picked among the limited evidence that it did consider. For example, in the parties' briefings, they agreed that there were seven references that established the state of the art. And if you look at the and each reference was thoroughly briefed and argued before the board at the hearing. If you look, though, at the final written decision, the board ignored five of those references in favor of only two. And under Graham versus John Deere, Arctic Cat, Kansas Jack, Randall Manufacturing, In Re Hedges, In Re Fine, all of these cases say that it's error for the board or court to ignore the state-of-the-art references and to cherry-pick among the prior art when it makes its validity decision. There's another group or set of evidence that the board also ignored in its decision, and that is the board relied on what we call POH reference and the James reference to combine them to come up with what it considered to disclose the invention. There was essentially a simultaneous or in the same time frame evidence of what in the real world would be a combination of those two references. And those documents came from Cirrus's own files. And what it showed is that when you combine the teachings of those two references, you do not arrive at what Mr. Fleming claimed. Instead, you arrive at an aircraft where you can use an autopilot to control its flight functions, but then if you want to deploy the parachute, you pull a handle and the parachute comes out. What you don't do is what Mr. Fleming claimed, and that is if you are in an emergency situation, you pull a parachute deployment handle, it turns control of the plane over to an autopilot, the autopilot then tries to control the plane and eventually deploys the parachutes. But what Cirrus did in the same time frame of Mr. Fleming's invention and this prior art was exactly the opposite. They used an autopilot to control the flight of the aircraft, but then they did not use the autopilot once they tried to activate the parachute. And we presented this evidence as a real-world combination of what these references would teach, and it was thoroughly briefed, it was thoroughly argued, and none of that appears in the final written decision. It was simply ignored. So again, I mean, this is with respect to the board, this is a cherry-picking of the evidence that we think is inconsistent with this court's precedent. I see that my time is up, Your Honors. I'll reserve the rest for rebuttal.
We will hold it for you, Mr. Dowler. Mr. Wagner.
May it please the court, Kevin Wagner on behalf of the Appellee Cirrus Design Corporation. And our position on appeal is that both of the board's findings that the original claims were invalid and rejecting the proposed amendments should be affirmed as supported by substantial evidence. I'm going to start with the proposed substitute claims. And with respect to those proposed amendments, Mr. Fleming's only challenge on appeal is based on claim construction. And the fundamental problem with that appeal is that he failed to establish that the board's rejections of his proposed claims were each dependent on claim construction. And in fact, they weren't. What we did in challenging those amendments was to challenge them under any construction. And if you look at the board's findings, both on written description and on indefiniteness, you'll see that they are invalid under any construction. First, the board found that the manual selection of the intelligence override interface, which is the only feature that Mr. Fleming points to for support, disqualifies it as support for the procedure selection limitation because that limitation requires a processor-based selection by the aircraft. The board found a lack of support for an aircraft configuration for a processor-based selection at appendix.
I just wanted to ask, do you think that finding about manual override or not, whether that's disputed in any way in these claim construction argument being made by Fleming?
No, I don't. I don't think he's made any argument about manual versus processor-based selection. His claim construction arguments are about what the procedures do and not really. He does make an argument about whether airspeed needs to be considered, and I don't think the board made any error with respect to that, but he doesn't make any claim construction arguments that would in any way impact the manual selection component of the written description finding. And the board was really clear at Appendix 48, saying it is not evident why the manual action of an occupant to pull a handle a second time constitutes selection using part of the distributing processing system. So when you read the final written decision as a whole, it's just super clear that the board considered this whole intelligence override really irrelevant to this feature because that was a manually selected feature. It's not a processor-based selection. And if Fleming had drafted his proposed amendments to claim an aircraft configured to allow an occupant to select, it might be a different story, but he claimed that the aircraft itself has to do the selection, and there's just no written description support for that, as the board found. The board also found that this intelligence override feature didn't actually use the processor at all. At Appendix 39 and again at 40 and 41, they found there's no disclosure of the aircraft being configured to activate via the processing system a selected procedure but not an unselected procedure based on a pull of the handle. This finding isn't even disputed. All that Mr. Fleming said about it in his reply brief was that that is what the board decided for Fleming's first three citations. And those are the only three citations that touch on this override feature. And that finding is, again, supported by substantial evidence because the specification only states that the intelligence override interface disregards the processor determinations. It never says that the processor is in any way involved with the override feature. Third, the board found that the intelligence override, its immediate deployment of the parachute, could not support Fleming's attempt to claim all procedures that do not make use of the autopilot to increase altitude. That's at Appendix 42 and a few other places as well. And this is the point where Fleming's appeal, in my view, gets really strange, because there's no dispute that there is no disclosure of that feature. He's not saying that the override actually does increase altitude without using the autopilot. Instead, he's trying to make a claim construction argument that would expand the claims even further beyond the subject matter that the board found was not supported. And, of course, under AREA, you need to have written description support for the full scope of your claims. So you can't avoid a written description issue by expanding the claims. If he wanted to avoid the written description problem through claim construction, what he should be doing is attempting to construe the claims as limited to an intelligence override that immediately deploys the parachute based on two handle pulls, and it appears he's not doing that. So his claim construction argument really just has no impact on the board's written description findings, each of which are supported by substantial evidence. The same is true with respect to indefiniteness. The board found the claims indefinite because they failed to specify any criteria for the processor to use in selecting between procedures. Again, that finding is unrelated.
Also, yes. Judge, why do you think that's necessary? Why can't the claim just be interpreted to be, hey, any number of criteria, if it was found to be, you know, infringed or invalid, any number of criteria could be used to make that choice between alternative one and alternative two. But it doesn't make the claim indefinite. It just makes it broad.
Yes. Two things I would say in response to that, Your Honor. First is that Fleming has not appealed that as part of his appeal. His only appeal is based on claim construction. And, of course, that issue is not related to claim construction. Second,
if indefiniteness, we have been asked to review indefiniteness. You agree with that, right? And it's a legal issue, right?
Indefiniteness is a legal issue, and he's asked you to review the indefiniteness on the basis of two purported claim construction errors, neither of which touches on selection criteria, because the board expressly found that this issue of whether airspeed is involved with selection, it found that it's not, and it found a complete absence of criteria. And the point we're making in this argument is that the claim needs to provide some definition around what either of these procedures are and how they're selected in order for it to be understandable, for there to be, you know, as Mr. Fleming is arguing that these are structural limitations, there need to be some structure that describes what either these procedures are or how they're selected, and the board found none. So it just is, without that, the claims are completely vague as to how this would ever be implemented. There's no description of what the procedures are or how you could select between them. So, again, that finding is supported by substantial evidence. Fleming's own expert admits that there's no criteria in the claim, and Fleming hasn't otherwise...
Not a finding, it's a legal conclusion, right?
As part of claim construction, that's correct. Indefiniteness is the legal conclusion.
Okay. And so I understand your position, I think, primarily is that they have waived their appeal of the indefiniteness argument, or that they've limited it just to the specific claim construction points that they've made. They argue indefiniteness and written description together, but I'm on the merits. I'm having a hard time understanding why it would be indefinite. What if, for example, the first procedure were operated if the aircraft altitude were above 5,000 feet and the second procedure was operated if it was below 5,000 feet? I mean, it would be pretty clear. I'm having a hard time. I think of indefiniteness as, for example, helping. The question is whether a person of ordinary skill in the art looking at the claims would know what they can and cannot do to infringe each claim. And the absence of a limitation telling you when you pick criteria, you know, the first procedure or the second procedure, I don't see where that makes the claim not, the scope of the claim not understood. It's just that the criteria, you don't know it from the claim. That's more of a written description problem or something, or an enablement problem than an indefiniteness problem. Do you want to address that issue, or would you rather just say that they waived it?
Well, I do think that they waived it, but just to address it briefly, this is supposed to be a selection that's carried out by a processor, and so there needs to be some definition around how the processor does that.
Let's say for a minute that there's something in the specification that gives you that criteria, because you're not arguing written description like a written description. So let's say, hypothetically, that there is, and it's the example I gave. You know, at a certain altitude, you will perform the first procedure. At a certain altitude, you'll perform the second procedure. Why does that have to be so specified in the claim? Whether a person of ordinary skill in the art would understand the scope of the claim to know whether they could infringe or not.
Yeah, two points in response to that, Your Honor. The first is that they're arguing this is a structural limitation, so you would expect there to be sufficient structure in the claim to perform that function of selecting. And then second, the board in this case actually did examine the specification as well to look and see if there was any of that criteria. Like you said, if you're above a particular altitude, that could be an example of criteria. But there was no criteria in the specification either. So they examined both the claims and the specification and found
no criteria. Well, that's written description. Do you agree with me that whether it's in written description is a written description issue, not a claim indefiniteness issue or not?
Well, I think if you're following through the indefiniteness analysis, you would first say, is there sufficient structure in the claim to carry out this such that it's understandable? If it's not, then you would go to the specification and say, is there some structure there that could fill that hole? And here the board found neither. But regardless, you know, I think the board's finding of lack of written description as well as indefiniteness are supported by substantial evidence, and if any one of those is correct and not affected by claim construction, then the board's rejection of the amended claims needs to be upheld as supported by substantial evidence. So even if you were to disagree with the legal underpinnings of the indefiniteness finding, first of all, I don't think that's been preserved, but it really is irrelevant here because there are multiple alternative grounds to affirm as well.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, just to briefly touch on claim construction, as I understand Mr. Fleming's argument now, he's trying to say that these procedure selection limitations are really apparatus limitations. But we're dealing with claim 140 here, which is a method claim that requires increasing altitude. That's one of the method steps. And so there's a fundamental problem with the argument he's making in trying to divorce these structural limitations in the preamble, which he's adding through amendment, and the method steps. And I'd just like to direct the court's attention to one case on this issue, which is the Schumer v. Laboratory Computer Systems case at 308 F3rd 1304 at 1310, Federal Circuit 2002, which addressed a similar argument and found that where the method limitations set out the complete invention, if there's not some linkage between structure set forth in the preamble and the actual method steps, that renders those structural limitations superfluous and meaningless. They just don't breathe life into the claim. And so I think what the board did in understanding the claims here is requiring some increase in altitude is the only reading of these claims that makes sense in the context of an IPR amendment, where these amendments were proposed specifically to try to overcome a prior art rejection. If those amendments are not effective and they're basically superfluous, then they can't accomplish that purpose. And so the board's understanding of these amendments was perfectly consistent with the claims as a whole. Also, just to reemphasize that Fleming's argument here his claim construction argument would only exacerbate the lack of description finding because it would include what the board found lacks written description, that would still be true, but he's arguing that the claim would include even more material because the second procedure could basically be anything under the sun, which is like facially lacking of written description support. Finally, in my last few minutes here, I just want to touch on the original claims, claims 137 through 139. Again, the board's finding with respect to those claims was supported by substantial evidence. We do think this is a classic case of a losing party asking the court to reweigh the evidence on appeal, which is inappropriate under the substantial evidence review standard. And I think the perfect example of that is what we just heard from my counterpart with respect to the background references, where he said, well, there's five that support our position and two that support Cirrus's. Without getting into the details of that, that's exactly what substantial evidence means if there's two that support our position, that's enough. And here, we presented a compelling case of obviousness where James taught a switch that uses an autopilot to perform flight maneuvers and deploy a parachute. And the POH taught the specific flight maneuvers that should be performed to prepare for parachute deployment. So when you combine those teachings, as our expert opined should be done in a detailed and thorough expert opinion, which the board repeatedly credited as credible and compelling, that is substantial evidence. And Fleming's, you know, picking and choosing of individual pieces of evidence that he thinks counsel towards a different outcome simply is not how the substantial evidence review is conducted. So unless the board has any further questions on that, I would cede the rest of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Wagner. Mr. Dowler has some rebuttal time.
Yes, thank you, Your Honors. Let me address first the idea that the board did not rely on its claim construction with respect to findings on written description support and indefiniteness. That is simply unsupportable. The board made efforts to announce a claim construction. We didn't explain it, but it certainly came out with one. And then if you look at the board's decision, it specifically quotes its claim construction on every finding that it made with respect to written description and indefiniteness. So the idea that somehow the board didn't rely on its claim construction, I think, is just simply insupportable in light of the express language of the final written decision itself. On a second point, Judge Stahl, I think you are exactly right. There's no reason why the claim has to claim a specific detail from the specification in terms of how the selection is made. The claim simply says the plane is configured to select between two procedures. It couldn't be any simpler, really, than that. If an accused device, has some mechanism for selecting between two procedures, then it's covered. If it doesn't, then it's not covered. But the idea that Cirrus requires, and the board, frankly, required, that Fleming write something into its claim to specify the exact selection procedure that his claim would be limited to is simply not a requirement, a claiming requirement, and certainly not an issue that rises to the level of indefiniteness. The specification explains exactly a scenario in how a selection is made. The system stores the pull count of the deployment handle. If the count is one, it does one procedure. If the count is two, it does a second procedure. Now, that pull count concept was not specifically claimed. The claim was claimed more broadly. But again, I think Judge Stahl, you hit the nail on the head in recognizing that's an issue of claim breadth, not an issue of claim indefiniteness. On the validity of the claims 137 through 139, it's simply our position that there can't be substantial evidence when the board ignored evidence. Mr. Wagner made the point. He said that we concede that the two references are against us. We don't concede that. But what the issue is there were seven references, all of which are important to the validity analysis, five of which were ignored completely. And I cited the cases to you. That is simply just an incorrect application of the reasoned analysis and evidentiary support requirement set forth in KSR, Arendi, and DSS, and a litany of other cases. Finally, another error in the board's analysis was the reason that it gave for being able to combine these references, POH and James, when neither reference disclosed the missing claim limitation, the gap in the art. The way that the Cirrus and the board filled that gap is through their expert saying that, well, we would arrive at the claim limitation, not through reference to the, not through explicit disclosure in the references themselves, but because it would have been, quote, safe and logical to do that. Well, this court has held that safe and logical in active video is a generic concept that does not support a combination of references. And I see my time is up, Your Honors. Thank you very much. I appreciate you listening to us.
Thank you, Mr. Dollar. The case is submitted. And that concludes today's arguments.
The Honorable Court is adjourned for the from day to day.